This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a senior United Nations official says Somalia is taking concrete steps to break the recurrent cycle of humanitarian emergencies by building more resilient institutions.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details next.
Also, Uganda's ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, has proposed scrapping the age limit for presidential candidates and extending the length of a presidential term. Business and political leaders pledged billions of dollars in funds and concrete steps to battle climate change at a summit in Paris. And a new report finds growing levels of e-waste pose significant risk to the environment and human health and result in huge economic losses for countries around the world.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, business and political leaders pledged billions of dollars in funds and concrete steps to battle climate change at a summit in Paris held 2 years after the groundbreaking climate deal struck in the French capital. While the United States is the only country to pull out of the agreement, the U.S. did not go unrepresented, as Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
French President Emmanuel Macron, the summit's host, wanted a practical meeting, and he got it. The climate-fighting pledges announced Tuesday included more than $10 billion in European Union investments for sustainable development and vows by companies and financial institutions for greener action, including some phasing out coal investments. Then came World Bank President Jim Yong Kim.
Today we're announcing that the World Bank Group will no longer finance upstream oil and gas after 2019.
Kim also announced billions of dollars in financing for developing countries and cities battling climate change, including West African coastal areas. The Senegalese seaside city of Saint-Louis, for example, will get $250 million in funding to tackle coastal erosion that has wiped out homes and fishermen's livelihoods.
There's not a single African head of state who hasn't told me that the boot of climate change is on their necks. They feel it every day.
More than 50 world leaders attended the summit. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was one of many who warned that the international community was falling behind on climate pledges, including allocating $100 billion in financing for developing countries by 2020. Meanwhile, emissions levels are rising, Guterres warned, as are severe storms and droughts.
We are in a war for the very existence of life on our planet as we know it. But we have an important ally, science and technology.
U.S. President Donald Trump considers efforts to fight climate change a barrier to economic growth. His administration's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement leaves it isolated. Even Syria has joined the pact.
Et si on est là ici aujourd'hui, c'est parce que beaucoup ont décidé de ne pas forcément.
While President Macron described Washington's withdrawal as a blow, he saluted local and state politicians and business leaders in the U.S., including California Governor Jerry Brown and former New York Mayor and businessman Michael Bloomberg, for stepping in to fill the gap. On Monday, Macron also awarded grants to more than a dozen U.S. climate researchers to pursue their work in France.
Et donc quand je dis qu'on est en train de perdre la bataille aujourd'hui, je veux que vous preniez conscience que derrière moi, il y a des chefs d'État et de gouvernement.
Macron painted a stark picture of what he said the planet will look like if not enough is done. Some of the leaders in the room, he warned, come from countries which will be wiped out in 50 or 100 years, along with their populations. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A new report finds growing levels of e-waste pose significant risks to the environment and human health and result in huge economic losses for the countries around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the International Telecommunication Union report in Geneva.
The Global Information Society is racing ahead at top speed. The International Telecommunication Union reports nearly half of the world uses the internet, and most people have access to mobile phones, laptops, televisions, refrigerators, and other electronic devices. ITU e-waste technical expert Vanessa Gray says growing consumerism is creating staggering amounts of electronic waste.
In 2016, the world generated a total of 44.7 million metric tons of e-waste, that is electronic and electrical equipment that is discarded. So that's basically everything that runs on a plug or on a battery. This is equivalent to about 4,500 Eiffel Towers for the year.
The report finds Asia generates the greatest amounts of e-waste, followed by Europe and the Americas. Africa and Oceania produce the least. Gray warns improper and unsafe treatment and disposal of e-waste pose significant risks to the environment and human health. She notes low recycling rates also result in important economic losses. This because the rich deposits of gold, silver, copper, and other high-value materials in e-waste are not recoverable.
We estimate that the value of recoverable materials contained in the 2016 e-waste is no less than $55 billion, which is actually more than the gross domestic product in many of the world's countries.
The report calls for the development of proper legislation to manage e-waste. It says a growing number of countries are moving in that direction. Currently, it says 66% of the world population living in 67 countries is covered by national e-waste management laws. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda's ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, has proposed scrapping the age limit for presidential candidates and extending the length of a presidential term. The proposal has the backing of President Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled Uganda for over 30 years. Halima Athumani has more from Kampala.
The proposed amendment to Uganda's constitution seeks to scrap the 75-year age limit for presidential candidates and extend the length of presidential terms from 5 to 7 years. The move would benefit longtime President Yoweri Museveni, for whom the parliament scrapped term limits in 2005. The Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee approved the constitutional change in a closed-door meeting last week, and the proposal will soon be presented to parliament. President Museveni voiced support for the proposal in a meeting with legislators.
2 terms of 5 years is simply a joke. When you hear somebody talking about it, you know that he just wants to improve his CV so that they say he was president. But to think that he wants to solve the problems of the people is totally out. So there is merit in looking at the 7 years.
But members of the opposition say the ruling National Resistance Movement should let Ugandans vote on the changes through a referendum. Winnie Kiza is the leader of the opposition in parliament.
Whatever Museveni has not done in 30 years, and by the time he finishes this term, it will be 35 years. He can't do it. We came here to serve a 5-year mandate. We can't reach midway, and then we say, look here, we want to change our mandate from 5. And if it is to happen, let Ugandans discuss it and see whether this is the trend they want to go.
There are reports that the bill is being delayed because legislators have demanded $83,000 each before they vote yes. Rafael Majezi, the NRM legislator behind the bill, denied the allegations.
That's untrue. I've not seen even a single shilling, and I don't expect it. Me, I'm prepared. I want this report. We debate it. I get the second reading, then my bill is passed. We should not go for Christmas with this bill still hanging.
The ruling party requires a yes vote from 2/3 of voting members, 290 in all, for the constitutional amendment to pass. If passed, President Museveni will be allowed to run in the 2021 elections when he will be 77 years old and could rule Uganda for many years to come. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
In the United States, Democrat Doug Jones won the special election to fill a vacant U.S. Senate seat representing the southern state of Alabama. His victory delivers what many see as a stunning setback to the Republican Party and a stinging rebuke to President Donald Trump, who had endorsed Republican candidate Roy Moore, even though he faces a chorus of sexual misconduct allegations. After a contentious campaign, voters backed Jones over Moore by a margin of 49.9% to 48.4%. The result means that in January, when Jones is sworn in, the Republican majority in the 100-seat Senate shrinks to 51-49. That could make it tougher for Trump to enact his agenda. Moore did not immediately concede the election to Jones.
Meanwhile, U.S. President Trump is facing a backlash after an insulting tweet about a Democratic senator from New York. Kirsten Gillibrand said yesterday the president is trying to silence her calls for his resignation following renewed allegations by women who claim that Trump harassed them sexually in the past. A group of U.S. Congresswomen yesterday demanded a probe into allegations of sexual misconduct against Trump.
A senior United Nations official says Somalia is taking concrete steps to break the recurrent cycle of humanitarian emergencies by building more resilient institutions. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than a quarter million people in Somalia died in 2011 when drought turned into famine. Despite multiple warnings of a looming famine this year, a similar catastrophic event did not occur. The UN Development Program Somalia Country Director George Conway says this clearly shows that famine is not inevitable. He says famine can be prevented if concerted action is taken and the underlying conditions of famine risk are effectively addressed and targeted. He spoke on a telephone from the capital, Mogadishu.
This year, despite drought conditions that were quite significantly worse than what we saw in 2010 to 11, famine has nonetheless been prevented. And this is a result of many factors. The government's early declaration of a national disaster, the UN's early call for upfront funding to prevent a famine, a quick and generous response from international donors, and a massive scale-up of assistance all contributed.
Additionally, he says progress in state and institution building, more effective governing institutions, and investment in stabilizing key regional capitals have enabled a more robust response than was possible in 2011. The United Nations is appealing for more than $5 billion to provide life-saving assistance for nearly 3.9 million Somalis next year. Conway says for the investment requirement, which includes recovery and longer-term resilience building, about $1.7 billion will be needed over the next 3 to 5 years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyas Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Uganda's ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, has proposed scrapping the age limit for presidential candidates and extending the length of a presidential term. Business and political leaders pledged billions of dollars in funds and concrete steps to battle climate change at a summit in Paris. And a new report finds growing levels of e-waste pose significant risks to the environment and human health and result in huge economic losses for countries around the world. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The U.S. Embassy in Addis Ababa today said it is troubled and saddened by news reports of violence in Ethiopia. Over the past few days, there have been reports of several protesters dying in violence in the town of Chilenco and at some universities. It is not clear what sparked the protest. There also are reports that the Ethiopian government has responded to protests by cutting access to social media and some internet sites. The U.S. Embassy says it encourages Ethiopians to uphold the tradition of respect for the country's ethnic diversity and peaceful coexistence.
Russian President Vladimir Putin recently announced plans to broaden military and technical cooperation with Egypt to boost its counterterrorism potential. The deal includes Russian access to Egyptian military bases. Professor Mark Katz is a professor of government and politics at George Mason University. He explained to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi how such a deal may affect Egyptian strategic cooperation with the U.S.
Well, it seems that Russian-Egyptian military relations are expanding, and certainly the prospect of Russia having a base in Egypt, this is obviously takes the Russian-Egyptian relationship to a new level, and that Putin is succeeding to some extent in restoring the relationship between Moscow and Cairo that existed back during the 1960s.
Several deals were announced, including, as you said, Russian access to Egyptian military bases. How would such deal affect the Egyptian strategic cooperation with the U.S., which until now is the top military ally of Egypt?
This is a new era. Now, certainly there have been other cases. Kyrgyzstan comes to mind, where there had been both a U.S. base and a Russian base. On the other hand, what we know is that in Kyrgyzstan, the Russians worked steadily to get the U.S. base removed, and that finally happened. Now, of course, Central Asia is not the Middle East, and we see, of course, in Djibouti that there's both, you know, U.S. military facilities and Chinese naval facilities now. So I think that, you know, the Russia making use of Egyptian bases, I guess it's not perhaps the same thing as a Russian base itself. Still, it's going to be something that the U.S. has to get used to. And, of course, there will be, I think, many in the Congress who will be very wary. What I think it indicates is that the Egyptian-American relationship is obviously not as close as it has been.
Could Egypt under Sisi be able to maintain close ties with both Russia and the U.S. while being a major recipient of U.S. economic and military aid?
I think they're going to try to do just that. I think that what they may calculate is that while the Americans might not like the Russians there, they really don't want to lose access to Egypt. That certainly the Israelis will not want them, you know, to see the relationship attenuate. Israelis are depending on U.S. aid to Egypt continuing. And I think so, you know, I think the Egyptians understand that, and that this, in fact, allows them a greater freedom of maneuver than they might have if they were located anywhere else in the world.
How would you expect the U.S. reaction to Egyptian-Russian negotiations over the construction by a Russian company of Egypt's first nuclear energy reactor?
I don't think that the Trump administration will object very strongly. I think that the Obama administration may have objected just because they obviously didn't like nuclear power. But I think that the Trump administration, they may have obviously preferred that, you know, a U.S. corporation be involved. But I don't think that they're really in a strong position to object to this.
That was Professor Mark Katz of George Mason University near Washington, D.C.
UN and private aid agencies are appealing for $4.4 billion to support more than 5 million destitute Syrian refugees and the impoverished communities hosting them in five neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the appeal in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 500,000 people have been killed. 7 million are displaced within Syria, and more than 5 million are living as refugees in neighboring Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, Iraq, and Egypt. Amin Awad is UNHCR Director for the Middle East and North Africa Bureau and Regional Refugee Coordinator for Syria and Iraq. He says there are no clear winners in this war, but there are many losers, both inside and outside Syria. They are the women and children, the elderly, the frail, and disabled. Despite the great needs, Awad says the UNHCR has been consistently underfunded throughout the years. He tells VOA his agency has had to make cuts in education, health, food, shelter, protection, and other areas. He says brutal cuts have had to be made in his agency's winterization program for 4.3 million refugees. This because only 50% of the money needed has been received.
We're not able to provide stoves, we're not able to deliver kerosene, we're not able to deliver enough thermal blankets, we're not able to winterize tents, we're not able to drain water and snow from camps, we're not able to do re-engineering work to insulate some of the buildings, people are sitting in cold, open buildings.
Awad says the situation for 1.7 million Syrian refugee children is particularly worrying. He says more than 40% are out of school and are destined to become part of a lost generation. As the war drags on with no political solution in sight, he says the situation for host countries is becoming even more burdensome. He says it is as vital for international donors to support these beleaguered communities as it is for them to assist the refugees who live among them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.